Hey, welcome to Tangible Takeaways, episode 122. I'm Jackson, and today I'm going to talk about how financial freedom might not look like what you think it looks like. I'm also here with Pastor Tom.
Yes, you are. I'm Mercer. I used to be the lead pastor at Ida's Church, and I'm now the president of the Oikos movement, and I'm very happy to be with Jackson anytime, but especially when we talk about the Word of God.
That's what I'm talking about. All that and more on this episode of Tangible Takeaways. And you go watch, standing by your side. Hey, welcome to Tangible Takeaways, episode 122. Thanks for being on, Pastor Tom.
My pleasure.
Yeah.
22 was my number in basketball with high school.
You know, that was my number too.
Yeah. Was it really?
He was, yeah. So I wanted to, but the players who were much better than me wanted to. So I ended up with, why not just outlet?
Well, everybody was better than me, so I don't know why I fell to the end of the line, but this could be a very special episode of Tangible Takeaways.
It's a special number.
If for no other reason.
Two special guys. Special-ish.
Well, we're special, all right. You can be very special.
Yeah. Well, I thank you for just taking the time and for being with us this weekend. We're so encouraged to hear you talk through the parable of the guy who wants to build bigger barns, you know, and it's kind of just talking to himself. I loved just your, I had never really caught that in the text. I thought that was such a powerful observation. He's just in a conversation with himself. That's how he gets himself into this mess. And like, I think for people who, there's probably people watching who, and they know Pastor Tom at HDC for years.
Yeah.
And there's other people that this is new to them, even though you were here for 38 years leading our church. And they might not know just how much of a wheelhouse topic this is for you. Like, I think for people who've been longtime HDC people, they're like, oh, Tom finances. Like, this is going to come up and he's going to do a really good job, a confident job of kind of conveying what God's word says. But I think that there's, this is an area that you see a lot of pastors and Bible teachers feel really kind of squeamish about or uncomfortable getting into, I think because they're nervous to come across as though they want your money and they don't want to kind of create conflict there. I don't know. There could be a lot of different reasons as to why they feel uncomfortable with it, but it's one that you taught on very passionately, very clearly, and we've been blessed because of it. But I kind of wanted to even start before we got into the parable as to why, when it comes to financial stewardship, that is such a kind of wheelhouse topic for you.
That's a very good question. Over the years, you become more confident in what works. And about this topic and just learning the truth about what the Bible says really works well for people. But I do think trust is the issue. You know, maybe why it has become a wheelhouse topic can be connected to the 38 years.
Yeah.
That over time, people come to finally understand that you're not in it for yourself as a pastor or even in it for your church. You're really in it for them.
Yeah.
And that's the approach the Bible takes when we can do it carefully. It's not about raising money as if God needed money. He owns everything already, as we said on the weekend again. But we need to give. You know, the message has been the same over the 38 years. Sometimes the church has been in a great position financially. I teach the same message.
Yeah.
Sometimes the church has been in an okay position financially. And, you know, then we got these voices that are thinking, oh, no, you know, we got to do something. And I've always been blessed with the gift of faith as a leader, so I was one of the last ones to ever panic. But then there are times that, you know, I was even a little bit fearful because the church was in a poor position financially. And we didn't know if we're going to have to cut back, we're going to have to let staff go, we're going to have to, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But the message that I would teach on the subject never waver, because it's just the truth. And, you know, people should never give a tithe based on the financial position of their local church. The tithe is our responsibility to give, period.
Yeah.
You know, we talked on the weekend, you know, bringing the white people to the table and having the conversation, and responsibility has been the lost voice in most Christian families when it comes to finances and how we spend our money. And Christians just don't feel responsible to be obedient in this area. Now, they will
be critical. We will be critical.
All kinds of other mistakes that people make. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, because it's money, you know, it's just disappeared. We have a hard time really engaging that topic. And there have been, I think, with the rise of media asks for money, and some of those are really caricatures of the Christian faith. I mean, they're ridiculous.
Yeah.
Guys asked for. I remember when I was a little older than you, just came to the church as a senior pastor back in 1984, and there was a real high-profile Christian leader who made a very public comment that if the church doesn't cough up $5 million, God told me he's going to take me home. Essentially putting the burden on his audience, whether he lives or dies. And there will be divine retribution if the people didn't get up. Well, you know, you look at that and you think, how ridiculous. And then they become jokes, you know, around the table, and jokes, you know, around the water cooler for so many people who are out there in the world, in the marketplace, just having conversations about these very public asks. And the church kind of became known for greed, our own greed. We just want people's money. We want to fleece the flock, as they say.
Yeah.
Never had that opinion. And whenever we talked on money, it wasn't because the church needed it, or it wasn't because, certainly never because the kingdom of God needed it. And what I would always say is, if Jesus is the head of the church will never meet financial support. Mm-hmm. So when people say, I don't give because the church doesn't need it, I say, you should never give because the church needs it.
Yeah.
You give because you need to do it as a responsible Christian. And it's all part of our growth. It's all part of our personal growth, you know, when we're willing to let go of even that 10%, you know, or something. Generally, we tend to be self-centered people because of our fallen nature. And when you start the conversation by letting go of 10% to your local church, which is 10% to the Lord, then it's everything else becomes easier. And I said on the weekend in multiple services, I'm not sure what I said. And in even service, so people watching this may say, yeah, I got to be like that. But I said it at least one of the services that, you know, just when you let go of, when you are responsible, you let go of that 10%, the rest of the discussion about need and about desire and about prunes all becomes so much easier. Mm-hmm. It becomes an easy conversation.
Yeah.
Now, back to your question specifically. Oh, I'm sorry, I was rambling. No. But I have the gift of ramble. It's right between service and help. So. When you ask, historically, it became a strength of ours to teach this topic unashamedly without feeling like, you know, people will think ill of me.
Yeah.
The first time, and I was a little reticent at first when I first became pastor of the church, and so I was a few years in, but by then the church has come to trust me. To a significant degree.
Yeah.
Now, when you consider the pastors generally, lead pastors generally have a shelf life at a particular location of only a few years.
Yeah.
They never are able to develop that level of trust. So when they talk about things as personal as money, people give them the benefit of the doubt that they really aren't in it for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm just, you know, Pastor Tom, young Pastor Tom, I was a little bit hesitant, you know, how are they going to take it? So we finally came up, I remember it was Living Trust was the name of the series.
Mm.
And it was through three parts, I think. And I taught on three parts. People, you know, not everybody, but a certain number of people said, okay, I'm going to start tithing. Jack said, I got so many notes and letters about 6 months later saying, Pastor Tom, we didn't realize how magical just being responsible financially to the Lord is. And how, you know, you talk about that need piece and that desire piece, prudence speech. How are you going to come up with that? It's so funny how when you're responsible, go back to Malachi 3, that's when God opens his floodgates.
Yeah.
And now, you know, the generous or generosity comes out of the desire voice, you know, at the table to hearken back to the message of the week. Now, instead of having X to figure out, you know, what am I going to do? I really want to take a vacation. I want to help, you know, a particular mission organization. I want to help our friends who are struggling financially. Now the Lord's just dumping more money into that desire piece. So now you can do so much more with it.
Yeah.
So it's really not like you have to make the choice, well, am I going to have to, you know, shut off my electricity to help my sick friend? God doesn't want you to do, God wants maybe to do both. So he's going to provide. But, man, the trigger. And if you're listening today, I could read you note after note after note. I could give you that testimony of Cheryl's in my life.
Yeah.
How that trigger is just being responsible to 10% of it. And I believe that.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm so confident in saying.
Yeah.
But the church family over the years, you know, we're just telling group people got to the point where they recognized the Pastor Tom's not a selfish dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hope they recognize that.
That trust that's built over time for sure plays such a huge role, because there's just that, you know, it's very true that time will tell, you know. And so right over time, it's like, oh, okay. The different times that we talked about money have not been for selfish gain. So that trust just continues to roll. And I think what's so powerful about every time I hear you talk on the topic is just how I think money for most of us can be a pretty like emotional area of our life. We act very emotional with money, and you bring it to such a like logical, nonsensical level of this is not, it's not even really that emotive thing God asks us to do. It's an obedient thing that God asks us to do. And it does ultimately then begin impacting our emotions and the way that we feel about money, because money starts to have less of a grip on us when we get in the rhythm of the first thing that we do when we get it is we give it away. That's the first action that we do that has a heart implication
that changes
your thing, yeah. Impacts the rest of it. And it is such a cool thing. Like that just makes so much sense that as you love the people, the more you hear from the people, this has changed my life for the better. And area, the reason Jesus talked about money so much, it has such a power and an impact to be able to grip people who really intend to follow Jesus.
Yeah.
But their money,
they want to,
and their desire for financial, you know, things and their own selfishness continues to pull them back.
Hey, you know, that 10%, so, you know, that is a, you know, writer Hebrews said, without faith, it's impossible to please God. So God is pleased when we take a step of faith. And some people have said, and again, over the years, they've been very honest with me, as I've been honest with them. And they said, we're looking at our budget, Pastor. And I mean, we could maybe identify how we've gotten ourselves in trouble financially for different reasons. Now we've got the debt load. And now we got, you know, all these contracts that we've signed, we're responsible to fulfill. You know, what do? We want to be obedient. You've convinced us. Maybe, you know, they're one of those families sitting out there when we would roll through this material every few years. And they say, we want to, but 10%, there's no way. I say, okay, if you don't have 10% faith, that's fine. That's why the disciples said, you know, when Jesus was talking about forgiving people, as many times as we need. The disciples just said, oh, bro, you got to increase our faith.
Yeah.
Well, that's life, is that we have a faith journey. And so I would tell them, I said, well, what kind of faith you got? And they said, well, we might be able to scratch together 1% or 2%. I said, well, then do 1% or 2%. If you got 1% or 2% faith, do 1% or 2%. And then at the end of the year, just commit to that for 1 year. Don't commit to it for 2 weeks. Or for a month, just suck it up and commit to it for a year. At the end of the year, if you missed that 1% or 2%, then all bets are off.
Yeah.
You'd be the first one I've ever met, but all bets are off. You can go back to doing whatever you're doing.
Yeah.
You can now think to yourself, what's a better plan? But if you didn't miss that money, and if God didn't give you more than you thought you were going to either earn or receive or whatever,
yeah,
then bump that up to 3% or 4%.
Yeah.
And then the next year, if, you know, at the end of the year, evaluate again. And then just gradually, incrementally, get up to that 10%, because that's the obedience.
Yeah.
You know, Malachi said, bring the whole tithe. That's 10%. That is a 10% number. And I have had, and again, I don't want to exaggerate. I'll just say I probably had, you know, 30 or 40 families with a note that said, okay, we took the challenge. We tested the Lord in this, which he tells you to do.
Yeah.
We tested him with 1%, with 2%. The first year, it was so miraculous. It was so transformational for our finances. We just went straight to 10 the second year.
Mm.
And they said, oh, we never look back. In fact, many of them said, we're up to 15, 20, 30% tithe.
Wow.
Because now our, the other piece of want, that desire piece, we have so much more to use it now.
Yeah.
So anyway, all I'm saying is that just give them a gain.
Yeah.
I mean, you can say, well, I can't afford 10% until the cows come home.
Yeah.
And you never will be able to afford 10%. And can I keep talking about?
Yeah.
Can I ramble a little more? It's always got to be the first 10%. Mm. The first 10% is not just the 10%, but the fact that it's first is such a statement to what's the most important thing in your life.
Mm.
And when you do put him first in everything, then God will just bless you so much. And people will give, I'm sorry, this is not even funny, but it's hilarious to me. They'll dedicate their children to God. They'll dedicate themselves to God. They'll ask them over and dedicate their house to God.
Yeah.
But their money, not going to dedicate that to God. And I'm saying, so talk to me a little bit about what's more important, your children or your money. Mm. You'll give your children to the Lord, but you'll hold on to your money.
Mm.
You have it all to the Lord. Every part of your life.
Yeah.
So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Yeah. No, it's powerful. And I think there's such a rich foundation because of that confident teaching, but also the results that have continued to come in people's lives, you know? And what that Malachi passage is so crazy that the Lord says, test me in this. Because he never, it's always, don't put the Lord to the test in anything, but test me in this. And what a cool invite that he gives to his people. Like, I want you to, in being obedient here, I want you to test my faithfulness, and you're going to see the way that I am faithful. And I think even for some people, then he realized, yeah, I didn't need as much as I thought I needed. That's what a lot of rhythm of tithing this. There's really cool ways that God supernaturally blesses, makes way financially for people when they take that stuff. But there's also times where it's just like, I was really only thinking about me. This has got me to stop only thinking about me.
Right.
And it's opened the door to, wow, maybe I don't need that much. And there's this freedom that comes with that. Like, sometimes financial freedom isn't having more financial income. Sometimes financial freedom is, I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm content. Like, there's power in that. And I don't need more, because advertising and marketing runs off of your impression of your life being that you need more. And that's what, like, pulls us in and is the kind of, like, soft spot in so many people's lives, that there are a bunch of forces in the world that want prey on that soft spot of, I need more. But when that realm of tithing gets you to the point, it's like, I'm okay. That leaves you in a very powerful position, because you're content.
Yeah. And you're also rich.
Yeah.
I mean, I know I'm not talking to everyone when I say that, but I'm talking to 99% of the people in the world, and certainly higher percentage of the people listening to this, watching that. But if you make, and I don't know the specific metrics anymore, I wasn't far in this weekend, but when I teach a lot in the past, I'd actually look up the the current numbers and statistics, and that if you're, you know, back then it was a, you're making like $40,000 or $50,000 a year pre-tax,
you know,
you're in the top 1% wage earners in the world.
Yeah.
So that's impressive, because when I tell anybody at High District Church or anybody watching this, you know, you're wealthy. They shall know wealthy.
Yeah.
Well, wealthy is a relative number, but you realize you're in the top 99 percentile of the world's wealthiest people, don't you? And they're shocked by that.
Yeah.
It's true, though.
Yeah.
And God has given all of us more than we need. And I do want to put this caveat out there, and I regret this because people may claim this when it's not necessarily true for them. But I believe that God calls some people to poverty. Hmm. In fact, some of the church fathers call that a spiritual gift, the gift of poverty.
Yeah.
Where God, for whatever reason, has decided that he's going to elevate you in his kingdom based on what you always need. Yeah. You're never going to have any. But generally speaking, I would say that this is the overwhelming percentage of people that are more normative in terms of how God uses their lives is this attitude of being satisfied with what you have. But until you're able to look at your expenses and recognize, yeah, I don't need this stuff to spend the money on.
Yes.
Just do the list. Just look at the list. Cheryl and I have a list of our expenditures, and we're very careful about tracking it all. And because our income is low, especially now, as I'm going to be 70 at the end of this year, I'm going to start collecting Social Security. Pretty excited about that. But, you know, we're going to be on limited income more than ever. And the older you get, the less you can make because the less you can work. So we're careful about our expenses, but God has always been so faithful. And we look at our lives, we look at, you know, what we have rather than what we don't have. Mm-hmm. Just look at what you have. Mm-hmm. And what God has given you, like right now, you know, forget that God opens the floodgates, pours out so much blessing, you can't even hold on to it. It's so big. Set that aside. Just look at what you got right now. How much more God has provided than you actually need.
Yeah.
It's a significant number.
Yeah. There's a, there's like a ancient Jewish prayer called the Dienium, which is like a, God, you overdid it today.
Yeah.
And it's prayed at the end of every day.
Wow.
And it's just, and it goes from things as simple as, Lord, I had enough food today, and that would have been enough, but the food tasted amazing.
Right.
And I got to eat the food with family, and we're healthy. And as you just start going down a list, you have overdone it. Like enough food for today would have, that we could have stopped there. But as you just keep going, because there is so much that we just skip right over the surface, we take for granted, don't even think twice about, in really not being thankful for God's faithfulness and his consistency in our life daily. It's something you become really thankful for when you start to have like a chronic health problem or chronic pain where you're like, and I never appreciated that things just worked in my body. That there was just like, and then when you lose all that point, man, I never really fully appreciated that I just had them, right? You start going down that list. It's such a cool rhythm of prayer to end the day to say, God, you have just outdone yourself today.
Who does that all the time? What you are grateful for versus what you feel you're entitled to. Mm-hmm. And what you're grateful for is what you have. Unfortunately, what we don't have, some of us think we're entitled to what we don't have. Mm-hmm. So we need to get what we don't have because we deserve what we don't have. And I keep reminding people, and what we deserve is to just die right now and go to hell.
Yeah.
It's what we deserve because we're sinful, selfish people.
Yeah.
And yet God so loved the world and gave his son to die so that we don't have to go to hell.
Yeah.
We can have salvation by faith in Jesus. And we weren't entitled to that. It starts with salvation. Yeah. God is so good. Because everything after going to hell, man, great, yeah. Baby. Because
yep.
I'm just thankful that I get to go to heaven when I die.
Yeah.
And now between, you know, the time I gave my life to Christ and the time I die, I go to heaven, just to your point, day after day after day, wow,
yeah,
I have more than I needed today.
Yeah. Yeah, exponentially. When you start doing the math, it's
huge.
Like, wow.
Yes.
When you talk about, when you really strip it down to what I need versus what my day consisted of. Wow, Lord, I'm thankful.
And gratitude is, every time you write a check, you're sending a thank you. I thank the Southwest Gas every month.
Yes.
Because
thank you.
Oh, I got dry clothes.
Yeah.
Thank you. I would have not known the first thing about running my own gas lines into my home to fuel my dryer, my clothes dryer. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
In fact, when I bought the dryer, I wrote a thank you check to the appliance store.
Yeah.
I said, I can't put a dryer together. What am I supposed to do?
Yeah.
But you guys made it possible for me to be able to have this appliance. And I signed that thank you note.
Yeah,
I send thank you notes constantly to our kids, one of our grandkids, you know, Ryan, she's graduating. You write a thank you note to her.
Yeah.
That says, thanks for just being a great granddaughter, being a great example to all of our other younger granddaughters.
Yeah.
Set the bar so high for them spiritually and your love for Jesus. And, you know, whenever I write a check for a birthday or special day, thanks for being such a great kid. On Mother's Day, thanks for being such a great mom and grandmother and wife, you know, to our family. We depend on you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And I can get, I can be a little bit, let's put it this way, I'm not cheap.
Yeah.
Because I just appreciate these people.
Yeah.
And so when you write that first thank you note, who are you most thankful to in your life? Southwest Gas, Southern California, yes. Your mortgage company. I mean, all these things. Mortgage company is another one. That's a big thank you. Because, man, I got a roof over my head tonight.
Yeah.
And I didn't have the money. You know, when we bought this place, I didn't have the money to do this.
Yeah.
You made it possible for me. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'll write that thank you note. But who are you more thankful for or to than anybody? Well, I'm mostly thankful to God. Well, then write that thank you note first.
Mm-hmm.
And what God says is, I want you to give that to your local church. Mm-hmm. You know, one guy put it this way. You pay your bills or you get your groceries.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just amazing to me. One of the things I did as a pastor, and I actually think, you know, our current lead pastor, Pop, your pops, he's such a wonderful pastor. And his philosophy, I don't know what it is, but I assume it's similar. I don't really want to know who gives.
Mm.
I don't want to know. And I made it very clear early on, I want to treat everybody like they're being responsible Christians financially to the church. Mm. I don't know if I would be carnal enough to show favoritism, but I didn't want to. That's my
option.
Yeah. I just wanted to, when I greet somebody, I just wanted to know, man, they're all in with me and the mission of this church. But so I didn't know. I didn't know any names. I just knew numbers. And I knew the incredibly large number, percentage of people, of attenders who did not say thank you to the Lord by directing money to their local church. And I would assume, you know, because it was such a large percentage. They're coming every week. They're benefiting from all of the ministries that are provided, and there's no sense of responsibility.
Mm.
I don't know. Maybe you let this out. Maybe this is a little too harsh. I just don't get that.
Yeah.
I don't get that. Who doesn't cut you off when you're not responsible to say thank you in a financial way? Gas company, they'll cut off your gas. Like a company, they'll cut off your electricity. Mortgage company, you're out.
Yeah.
You know, eventually.
Yeah. You got a little bit longer in California, but
you could milk that thing for a long time. Yeah. All I'm saying is that everybody's going to say enough's enough. God doesn't do that. Yeah. And neither does either as a church.
Yeah.
You keep coming. We love you. But at some point, come on.
And that's the beautiful thing about it, is the heart behind it is that because all the stuff we could do if you started giving, it's bad for you that you're not giving. It's totally bad for your discipleship to Jesus that you're not giving. And so we want you to look more like Jesus. We want you to give more of your life over to Jesus. Clearly, his authority and rule and reign in your life has not penetrated to your finances.
Yeah.
And we want that for you because that's where freedom is. That's where joy is. That's where peace is, which those are three things that I think everybody wants in their financial situation. You find that in surrendering your finances to Jesus by giving him what comes in first instead of holding out and trying to just accumulate enough.
Yeah.
Because like you so wisely put it this weekend, enough is such a moving target. And that element of greed that you talked about this weekend, you mentioned it's very hard to evict greed once it's come into your life. I loved it. It was such a powerful illustration. You equated it to a thief in your home, right? It's much easier to guard against a thief in your home, but once a thief's in your home,
hard to get him out.
And so if somebody was listening this weekend versus listening now, I was like, man, greed has taken root in my life. And they're feeling convicted at that. Well, there might be kind of a long road ahead to evict that greed from their life. So what are some steps that they can start taking to make greed uncomfortable in their life?
Begin
pushing them out.
The easy answer is the correct answer. You got faith for 1%, 2%, or 10%.
Yeah.
Start giving.
Yeah.
And you know, in my grittier day, when you sign that check, say, Lord, this is faith because I don't get this. But without faith, it's impossible to please God. With faith, God is pleased. And that is the best first step, in my opinion, in evicting greed. Because God will show us eventually, when we make a good decision, good things happen. And when your financial life, and not just your financial life, if you didn't have financial stress in your life, if you truly trusted the Lord with your finances, then the economy, even the election, not that we're not involved in economics or not involved in politics and all of that, Christians should not just sit back and do nothing. I'm just saying the stress is gone. Mm-hmm. I have been responsible to the Lord, and I know he has my back. If I'm irresponsible with the Lord, it's not like he's going to send me to hell. It's not like he's mad at me. But it just doesn't add up.
Yeah.
And so when we're faithful to him, we can expect good things. That in any area.
Yeah.
So
it's incredibly ironic when we're not faithful to him to shake our fist at him and say, why aren't things better in my life?
It makes no, it's ludicrous.
Yeah.
I mean, it is ludicrous how he's the first one we blame.
Yeah.
Because he didn't come through for us.
I've been doing my life my way, and you have not blessed.
I thought to myself, why is it God?
Yeah.
More faithful to us? God is faithful. He's, and, you know, I just feel like to answer your question, that's the easiest thing to do. And if if it's just 1 or 2% of just starting your financial conversation, just with a 1 or 2% step of faith, and test the Lord, baby steps, test the Lord, and see if he doesn't, I don't know about floodgates with a small step of faith, but there's going to be a much more significant response than you're being willing to give.
Yeah.
My father used to say, you remember Pastor Frank, he's meant a lot to your folks and a lot of people, certainly to Cheryl and I, but he used to say, I heard him say this, Jackson. I don't want to exaggerate, but I know I heard him say it a couple hundred times.
Yeah.
Just growing up.
Yeah.
You can never outgive God. Mm. He will always give more back than you give to him.
Mm.
And I'm a testimony of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would never ask anybody to do something that didn't work for me.
Yeah.
So it's something to try, something to consider. And I, you know, you talked a minute ago about the emotion versus the rational conversation. This just makes common sense that we would expect that God would be pleased by being responsible.
Yeah.
But, you know, the fear that we have is always going to be there, even now. There are times I wonder, you know, how are we going to make all the financial pieces work? Mm-hmm. But when you're obedient, when your will overrides your emotion, then you got something.
Yeah.
And God felt pleased for you.
Yeah. And it is so much harder, I think, that people realize to live our lives connected to our deepest desires.
Yeah.
Like our life is so easily hijacked by surface desires, things that we can please instantly and momentarily. It takes discipline and intentionality to say, well, what I most want to do with my life is to please God and do life with Him. Well, then I'm going to have to make intentional decisions of self-sacrifice to get in touch with my deepest desire in life. Otherwise, my life is going to continue to be hijacked by, well, that sounds really good. And so I'll just do that thing instead, because at least I can get a little bit of satisfaction there when I know that the long-term satisfaction, the deepest satisfaction, comes from connecting with my deepest desire, which is to honor God and to do life with Him. But that takes some intentionality, some intentional steps. And if somebody is in touch with that, you know, I loved kind of your just breakdown in the table of how the kind of finances break down. They've got 10 to prudence and 10 to responsibility and 50 to need. And they're left over with that extra 30 and desire. Well, that was, as I loved that you hit on this, because sometimes people think, oh, I'm generous. I tie it to my church. It's like, you're just obedient. That's not, we're not into the realm of generosity yet. And so it's really with that 30% left over, it's like, okay, now we've got an opportunity to be generous.
Yeah.
People might have heard back this weekend and they're like, so all my fun money's gone. Like, I'm not doing vacations anymore. Like, what am I doing? And that's certainly not what we're saying. But how do you kind of encourage people to balance that 30% getting spent on me versus getting spent on being generous? How do you exercise discernment in that area?
Well, initially, it's the same answer as the responsibility with the tithe. Initially, it's still a fear provoking step of faith, and you get that 30%, and you've looked at your list of expenditures and you recognize, man, all of our money's coming to us for our desires.
Yeah.
Let's take a little piece and let's send it somewhere just to be generous.
Yeah.
Let's send it to a needy member of our own house that's struggling for some reason. Let's send it to you could send more to HDC. You could send some to, I lead a nonprofit, so I hesitate to say this, self-serving, but you could send a little bit to the Old Cast movement or another gospel elevating ministry.
Yeah.
You can do that just a little bit and then just sit back, make a commitment for 12 months to do that.
Yeah.
And you say, well, I'd have to maybe reduce our cable bill. Okay. That'd probably be good for you at a lot of levels.
Yeah.
Or maybe I, can't afford to go to Starbucks as often and have to make my own iced tea. So which I do. Never tell you what, I have my own brew.
Oh, it's like a custom.
Most of it's pretty cheap. And then I add a little bit of stuff here at places like Starbucks. And man, that'd be another podcast.
I make a pot of tea with you.
Pastor Tom's iced tea. I'm kind of a snob when it comes to it, and that might be the largest podcast audience we ever had.
Yeah, might be.
But it might be you just gotta cut your Starbucks runs in half.
Yeah.
You know, the Starbucks runs that you take every day that you need? Every day? Okay. Well, let's take half of them.
Yeah.
And let's push those. And then just watch, Jackson. Just commit to that for, 6 months, 9 months, 12 months, whatever. And just sit back and watch and see what the Lord does. Mm.
And then at the, you know, if you're, you know, all stressed out at the end of the year because you didn't get all those Starbucks you needed, then I would say, wow, it didn't work for you. I've never met anybody like that before in my life. Yeah. Or the thousands of people, you'd fall into the same camp of saying, it's kind of weird. Not only did I get my Starbucks money back, but I was able to triple the gift of generosity. Mm-hmm. I mean, that Malachi 3 passage is part of the Bible.
Yeah.
So when I teach that, I think it's true. And I love the way it reads. You know, you bring the whole tithe and then just see. If I don't, I love that.
Yeah.
Just sit back and see.
Yeah.
What happens. So that'd be my advice.
Yeah. It reminds me of, in some ways, of Jesus' parable of the persistent widow, where he's like, I'd love for you to bother. Like, if you just start, like, bothering me with your prayers, that'd be awesome. And it's just such an audacious request. And similarly for this,
yeah,
where it's like, would you just give me the whole tithe and just watch what I do? Because that's what I think we miss about God in this conversation with money, is he is so eager to bless his kids. Like any dad is.
Yeah.
Like, that's just, anybody who has a child, you are eager to bless that child, to provide for them. And then being obedient creates a way and a path
for you to
pour blessing onto the body.
Yeah.
It's when they're disobedient, we gotta have different conversations. And they're not the conversations that the father wants to be having.
Are you saying that you had different conversations with your dad when you were disobedient?
No, never.
That's so good. Because it's so true.
Yeah.
You know, dads are, you're a dad.
My son's birthday is next week, and I am so looking forward to it because I want to give him good stuff.
Listen, and your son is your father's grandson.
Uh-huh.
I'm just telling you, as much as you want that,
yeah,
bro, that's why your dad's always broke. He just got to push all that money toward his grandkids.
He's not short. God,
that's right.
Yeah,
but God has a very special place for grandparents. To be the lovers, you know, in weird, cool ways with grandchildren. And even now, you know, the prudence piece that we talked about, saving.
Yeah.
And, you know, now with, you know, retirement or semi-retirement or whatever I am now, you know, and I'm thankful we've got a little bit that we saved. I'm very thankful for that. I wish it was more.
Yeah.
But it's
the opportunity it creates.
Yes, because now it's like we got little grandkids. We need money now more than
we left those little goofballs, and some of them are older now, so I shouldn't say that. Anyway, it's all fun.
Yeah,
just fun.
Well, thank you very much for taking the time to appreciate it.
I appreciate your accent,
wisdom in this area. And I know I've benefited so much from growing up under that teaching, but I hope that it's been encouraging to people.
Go Mavs.
Yeah, go Mavs. We'll reform.
That's right.
Hey, I hope it's been a good conversation for you. As always, don't forget to like the video and subscribe so that you get future videos as well. And maybe leave a comment of something you're taking away from Pastor Tom's message this weekend. And if this has been an encouraging video for you in the realm of your finances and financial stewardship, maybe share it with a friend as well, because it might be encouraging to them. That's all we have for this week. We'll catch you guys next week on Tangible Takeaways.